Welcome, everybody, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to Everyday Astrology with C.A. Brooks on Transcendental Tuesdays here on 1-2 Radio. Although I'm thinking with Pluto finally making its big move into Aquarius, maybe we should start saying Transformational Tuesdays, but we'll think about that. In any case, we are endeavoring to change the way that we listen to the world. And this is November 19th, 2024. And yes, I am back. And I'm so glad to be back. It's wonderful to be here with you, but it was also wonderful to take a little break, which I often do in November. You know, just kind of take some private time, spend some time with my family, that kind of thing. So Mark did such a wonderful job. I was able to hear one of the shows live, even though I couldn't, get into Facebook. You know how that is. That's my continuing thing. Maybe during this upcoming Mercury retrograde, which starts next Monday, maybe I'll figure that out. But in any case, Mark, thank you so much for doing a wonderful job, and thank you for all your guests. I know Kat was a guest, and Peggy Reeser, and Callie Whetstone, and that was wonderful. Thank you. I really appreciate that, for just taking that space and you know, being entertaining, being educational, being inspirational. So thanks to all of you for doing that while I was gone. And today, I also have an amazing and inspirational guest, which is Mo Abdelbaki, who, of course, is a Vedic astrologer and a Tarot master, and knows just a little bit about everything. In fact, I should say knows a lot about a lot of things. So Mo is with me today, and we'll be talking about, you know, whatever comes up for us, probably Aquarius, I'm hoping a little bit, since Pluto is moving into Aquarius. But I'm going to introduce the show with just a couple of ideas. And this is big. I mean, Pluto moving into Aquarius this afternoon. So I'm going to hold off most of that talk, most of that conversation until next week. We will talk about that. And of course, Pluto is going to be in Aquarius for almost 20 years through the March of 2043, then it's going to play around a little bit. You know, it's going to go into Pisces, and then it's going to retrograde, then it's going to go back into Aquarius, and then go back into Pisces, that kind of thing. So it really will be January 2044 before Pluto really leaves Aquarius. So, you know, for a lot of us, I mean, this is a really big deal, and May be the last sign that Pluto is in for us, you know, for the rest of our lives, you know, depending on how old we are and how things go. So this is big, and I'm always excited. Astrology is such a wonderful lens through which to view the world, which is what it is. Those planets don't make anything happen, but they certainly reflect mass consciousness. And I think it's a wonderful tool for looking at what's going on around us and for us, etc. So, of course, we've got 20 years to talk about Pluto, and we will do it. But for this week, we also have the Sun moving into Sagittarius. And so I want to give you just a couple of ideas before Mo comes on, and then we'll discuss those. But I always like to have kind of what I call a mantra for the week. And as I look at the different energies and things going on, and I pull some cards and that sort of thing, I always get a feeling about what is this week about. Well, interestingly enough, healing is the word that really came up for me this week. And maybe that is a little nod to the Sun in Sagittarius, because of course the mythology there includes Chiron, who was the wounded healer and representative of Sagittarius. So, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons it came up, but these are just some of the ideas I'm going to throw out. And here again, this is more of a nod to Sagittarius and the Sun moving into Sagittarius, but there's also some ideas from Pluto too. But remember, with Pluto, I'm not going to say there's just one big message for Pluto and Aquarius. I think that will evolve over time, but I think there are at least three big messages that probably will endure throughout this 20-year period. So healing, though, is where we're going to start. And what I'm saying about that is it's kind of like, you know, and maybe this comes from just what I was doing, but just getting away from it all. You know, sometimes things are too overwhelming or they feel that way. Just getting away from it all and really asking yourself, what nourishes my body, mind, and soul? And this week, try to focus on some of those activities, some of those things. Remove yourself from some of the situations, maybe not permanently, but just, you know, take a break. Remove yourself from some of those things that are feeling too stressful, too much. You know, just do a temporary breakup, so to speak, with whatever it is that you feel like is really stressing you out. Like I said, I'm not saying permanently. I'm just saying take a break and focus on restorative nutrition. Meaning, once again, it's not just about, you know, judging yourself for what you do or you don't eat or that kind of thing, but what restores your body? What are those foods, those drinks that you feel like really just bring you back, help you recover? And focus on rest and recharging. Do things in moderation, unless, of course, maybe you need to go to extreme for something, but I'd suggest moderation. And maybe more than anything else, mindfulness. Just pay attention. You know, when things are happening for us, and even when we're doing something that we don't like, you know, we go, oh, I hate it when I have that response to that person. You know, we don't need to judge it. Maybe we can just observe it and just say, you know what? Yep, there I go again. But can I just observe it without judging it? Because believe it or not, the more we pay attention to our own behavior and become those non-judgmental observers, we will find ourselves being less judgmental of other people. I mean, at least I found, you know, setting an intention and saying, okay, I'm not going to judge anymore. I'm not going to criticize anymore. Well, somehow they never quite work. But maybe starting on ourselves and just saying, yeah, that didn't feel so good when I, you know, when I really criticized myself. You know, how often do you find yourself saying, well, that was dumb, that was stupid, why did you do that? Well, quit talking to yourself that way, you know, or at least when you do, observe it and say, yeah, that didn't feel so good when I did that. So this week, it's about healing, but healing from a sense of, you know, not necessarily correcting something, but just finding ways to nourish yourself, restore yourself, and on, you know, multiple levels, body, mind, and soul. Now, taking a quick peek into Pluto, and I'm almost doing these a disservice, but I'm going to throw these out because these are things that I personally am going to come back to, because I do think this is about Pluto and Aquarius. And the first one and the main one is find your pack. And what do I mean by that? However you choose to identify it, find your group, your tribe, your faction, family, clan, community, alliance, village, coalition, or your soulmate circle. And remember, because we're talking about Aquarius, over time we might identify with more than one, and chances are we're going to change our affiliation over time, because that is the Aquarian way. But I think that is going to be huge during this 20-year period. Find your pack. Know who those people are. You know, this is about alignment with people. And at first you align with them probably because you have something in common with them, you think like them, but there again, over time, you may find that you don't. But that's gonna be a concept that we're gonna come back to time and time again. The second one that I'm gonna come back to is learning to use games and sparring and competition and those kinds of things to improve our knowledge, skills, and abilities. You know, being with other people, working with other people, and some we're going to like and some we're not, but learning to use all different ways, but especially when we're in competition, make things a game. And this is a way to hone our intuition and sharpen our minds as well. Then the third is using our talents and abilities collaboratively in cooperation with others toward projects that represent shared values across many individuals, groups, and communities. So that's kind of the initial Pluto takeaway that, you know, when I was doing meditations and really just focusing on this Pluto energy, that's what it was. Find your pack. Learn to compete with a purpose and use your talents and abilities collaboratively. So like I said, we're going to explore those much more as we move into the future, but I want to give you those. And just like, especially if one of those kind of grabs you, then go ahead and you know, think about that this week. And like I said, we're going to keep coming back because I'm a repetitive person. probably OCD a little bit, right? So that's what we're going to do. Now, I also want to let you know that on Thursday, that's when the sun leaves introspective Scorpio and sails into sunny Sagittarius. You know, that's an upbeat, hopeful, you know, truth-seeking kind of energy. And that's what's going on this week too. And here again, we'll probably talk about that maybe a little bit next week. But as we go through this period, which will extend through December 1st, recognize that we may be restless, because I think that's kind of Sagittarian energy. I want to get up and go. Remember, it's the centaur, half horse, half, you know, human. And I want to get up and go. I want to go somewhere. I'm not going to sit here on my duff, so to speak. And so we may really want to travel, or we may just have a desire to travel, you know, cognitively in our minds, study something new, take up a new sport, or go deeper with a spiritual practice. Sagittarius for me is always associated with spirituality, because I think it's looking for the truth. It's trying to connect the dots and figure out, you know, sort of a life philosophy. So that's what we've got going on the next 30 days with the sun in Sagittarius. And I'm going to now get Mo on the show. But before I do, I am going to, we're going to go with Mo and ask him what he's thinking these days. And if he does have some thoughts on Aquarius, we're going to go there. So Mo, are you with me?
I'm here.
Okay. So what are your thoughts about what's going on in the world?
Well, do you really want to know?
Well, we only have 45 minutes, so yeah, I recognize that, but just, you know, and by the way, people, you know that he's a Vedic astrologer, which means they do not use the planet Pluto, even though Mo knows a lot about Pluto and knows about that kind of energy, but that's why I was asking about Aquarius specifically, because there are correlations with the Vedic system.
Right, right. Well, I'm fond of Aquarius. I mean, our whole thing, when you and I were young, and we were young, and mm-hmm. we're still young, I think that one of the things about our generation is that we were young, and it was embedded within us to be young. I still feel young. I think you do too, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a member of a Grateful Dead, several of them, Grateful Dead Facebook thing groups. And they're young people. I don't know what generation they belong to, but they're pretty disrespectful to my generation, our generation. They think they're, you know, call us hippies, which is, I consider myself a hippie, and I'm okay with that. And but they're very disrespectful about rude things, and one was this hippie idealism, and they're quite negative about it. And I think to myself, well, that's okay, but they weren't there. They don't understand the way it was. They didn't bask in it. They weren't a part of the Aquarian dream that was there. The whole feeling that was there. And maybe you weren't part of that dream. I don't know. I was. I mean, I
no,
felt
I was.
It.
I was. Yeah. I think we manifested it in different ways, but absolutely, I know what you're talking about. But you know, one thing, and this goes without saying, so why am I saying it? But every generation does tend to look at the generations before them and go, ah, what were they thinking? And not right. having a great appreciation often for what was moving that generation.
Well, true, but there is that. But I actually was very fond of the music of the 30s and 40s and 20s. I was fond of the people. I liked them. I liked mm-hmm. the big band movement. I was appreciative of the Greatest Generation, as they called themselves. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was actually Brokaw is the one, I think, who put that together. I was very fond of them. I liked my parents. I liked the people of that generation. I respected them, but I loved what we were doing. I loved the concept of no war. I loved the idea of peace and love. And basking in it was remarkable. It was lovely. There was a lot to it. And the thing about it is that we were in the midst of the Vietnam War. We were in the midst of some pretty hard, you remember the John Birch Society, I imagine, and the way that felt. And so to be delivered, you have to go through a dark time. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. You have to be, the Aquarius is the water bearer. Aquarius gives relief. Aquarius relieves thirst. And you have to be thirsty. You have to be parched. And so there has to be a time of trouble. And so I think that that's the key, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is that there has to be stress and there has to be trauma in order for us to understand the meaning of deliverance. And so it makes perfect sense to me that Pluto is about to go into Aquarius. Mm-hmm. You know, what else can I say?
Yeah. Well, I do want you to, if you have anything else from a Vedic perspective about Aquarius, I want you to talk about that. And also, like, for instance, I think people are probably saying, but why did you identify as the generation of Aquarius? You know, what made that happen? I mean, Pluto certainly wasn't there. Pluto, in fact, was in Leo. Well, Pluto was in Leo, right, for you?
Right.
And that, and there again, the one great or interesting kind of thing to hang on to about Pluto is that because it moves in cycles of somewhere between 12 and 22 years, but let's say on average 18, maybe 20 years, that means that it's very much a generational influence. Right. So our parents all had Pluto in Cancer, and our grandparents had it, you know, before that. So as you look at people, we're all a group identified in the Western astrology system by where Pluto was. That was one identifying characteristic. And even though Leo is technically opposing Aquarius in the system,
well, I think,
but finding that kind of balance, go ahead.
Right. Well, the whole thing was, you know, it was that song, but for us in Leo,
it was
we were saying, look at us. You know, we are the children of, you know, we are the lions. We are strong.
Children
of the sun. Yeah, children of the sun, and more than that, we are us. We are we are the Leos. We are selfish. We are,
me and self-expression.
That's right, and you know that's us, and we're gonna run around naked, and which was a lot of fun at times, but you know, it was also a lot of skin cancer. But the other side of that is that the song came out and said, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. And that was dealing with the precession of the equinox, which was confusing to so many and still is. But we're getting close. We're getting close, another 400 or 500 years. But the real thing is that it was hoping, it was pulling us out of the Piscean era. That's what that song was about. Mm-hmm. And hopefully saying, we no longer have to be in an age of self-sacrifice. We no longer have to be in an age of that whole paradigm. I don't want to get into this whole concept of Judeo-Christian ethic or really monotheism or dealing with the whole concept of...
But you know what? That is part of what it is. And you know, the other thing I want you to address, simply because people, it may be confusing, is why do the ages go apparently backwards? Like we were in the age of Pisces for several thousand years, and then it's the age of Aquarius. Yes.
Yeah.
So why, you know, and you don't have to give us all the physics behind it, but let's that clear that somebody's going, okay, what are they talking about? It's going from Pisces to Aquarius. Well, it moves in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Righto. Well, the precession of the equinox deals with the fact that the equinox occurs in signs. and that it moves backwards approximately every 2,000 years. So once upon a time, it was the age of the bull. The equinox occurred in Taurus for about 2,000 years. And we see that reflected in, for example, ancient Egypt when the bull was worshipped, as in Apis, right? And so the mighty bull in ancient Egypt and in the Minoan culture with the bull there in Crete and so on and so forth. And we see that it was the lion before that, as you can see, and once in Leo. And then we see, well, I won't go that far back, but then we see it in Aries. We can see the ram was worshipped, for example, in Karnak. And then we go back to the fish, the age of the fish, the Piscean age. And that's about 2,000 years ago, a little more than that happened, so and so. And then we're in the Piscean age now. And that's been for about 2,000 years. And eventually, we will go into the Aquarian age. And that will occur when the vernal equinox takes place in any part of Aquarius, which is about another 400 years or so. And then we will go into the Aquarian age. And I said about 400 years. And then after that, we will go into the Capricornian age. And so it just moves backwards. It goes backwards and backwards and backwards. And that has to do with the precession. And that's because the Earth wobbles the way a top does when the top is losing its momentum. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just, that is physics. And once again, if you go to YouTube, I have, go to Mo Abdelbaki, just type in my name, and you'll see I have a very lengthy, that's 20 minutes or something. It's way too long, but it's it's informative. And it'll tell you all about it. It talks about the precession of the equinox, and it explains it in detail, and I think it's pretty good. It tells all about why this happens and why the equinox changes, and it also talks about the tropics and what the tropics are on our planet and why we have places that are very warm and why it's just, you know, it talks all about it. And you'll never wonder again. More than you need to know, maybe. But
you'll be satiated with animated. That, huh? Yes.
Yeah, it's animated and it's the whole bit. But it really is kind of wonderful stuff. And all you have to do is go out a few nights and look at stars, and you begin to see what was so enthralling about constellations to our ancestors, and you get hooked because the stars are incredible. And you look up and you see these marvelous constellations, and Aquarius is gigantic. It's a gigantic constellation. As a matter of fact, the whole water part of the sky is immense. Truly just magnificent. Wonderful stuff. Wonderful.
Yes.
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 Anyway,
well,
thank
you
lost.
For that. No. I love it, and I love you introducing those ideas. Like, I was listening to Mark's show yesterday, and I'm just laughing. I always laugh, no matter what he's talking about. But he was saying some wonderful things, and you know, and also he was talking a lot about Sagittarius and the mythology. And of course, he's talking about myths that I don't think about very often, because I kind of get hooked on the mythology that I associate with a particular sign. So it was a wonderful show just listening to him talk about the mythology as the way he saw Sagittarius. So, you know, I think if every single radio show was identical, I'd be bored.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and astrology is very multifaceted, and I love the different perspectives. And that's why I wanted you to talk about Aquarius and, you know, and just introduce some of those ideas coming from your personal experience and your studies of what does it mean for Aquarius? And then, you know, and then letting people start applying those ideas to how that becomes the background for the next two decades with Pluto sitting there. Because oftentimes, unless Pluto, I think, is really, you know, provoking something in your natal chart, you may not even notice it. It really does become like a background, you know, like the wallpaper or something. Then all of a sudden it comes front and center, but still it's the background of the age that we're living in. And it's the background of the next 20 years. It's going to be there always, kind of, you know, stirring itself in the pot, so to speak.
Right. Well, Aquarius is also one of the four pillars of the universe.
Okay, and what does that mean?
Well, there are four pillars of the universe, and those are the fixed signs of the zodiac, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are four fixed signs. So there's Taurus and Leo and Scorpio and Aquarius. And this is my theoretical stuff here. You know, the angel of Tarot is Raphael, right?
Okay.
And we find that, and the question is kind of, well, why? Why is Raphael the Tarot guy? And you say, well, there's a lot of interesting things about Tarot. A lot of interesting things about Tarot and the sky. And I mean, there's so much fascinating stuff. I realized, you know, I studied the Crowley deck for 45 years, right in there. And I realized that there's stuff about the deck that I was compulsively studying, and that when I die, it's just gonna, you know, like a candle flame, it's just gonna go away. And I thought, well, maybe I should write a book. And then I thought, who cares? I don't think people really care about it that much. But this is one of the juicy little tidbits about all that. And that is that there are four very bright stars in all of those constellations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is that there is one in Aquarius, and that is Fomalhaut. And Fomalhaut is this beautiful, bright, shining. It's right underneath. It's in Aquarius, but it's in the fish. It's beneath Aquarius. It's called the fish, and it's this bright, 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 diamond-like. It's amazing. And that's F, Fomalhaut. And then there is this bright red star in Antares, in Scorpio, and that's A. And then there's the Aldebaran in Taurus. And then there's Regulus and in Leo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this square up in the sky of Regulus and Taurus, and then Fomalhaut and Aldebaran, and that spells Rapha, right?
Oh, okay.
And so we have Raphael, and that's Raphael. That's the Raphael means the healing of God.
The healing of God. Okay.
Right, and that's the angel Raphael, and that's, in my opinion, it's a natural. That's why Raphael is the angel of Tarot. So these are the Hermetics. They looked at that and they said, well, that's why he has to be that. And that's why the Tarot system begins with Saturn in Leo. That's why it starts there, you see, because that's where they're saying that's where it has to start. So when Tarot, it begins with the Five of Wands. So that's why Tarot begins at the Five of Wands, Saturn and Leo. That's how you know where it begins. Boom, 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 all the way around. I'm getting a little maybe obtuse, but that's why it starts with that. People always say, why does it start there? Well, that's why. And that's how the Hermetics designed Tarot when they encoded it. That they had to start there and said, this is how it has to begin. So these are the little nuances of Hermetic Tarot. This is why they did it that way. Said, here's how it has to begin. And that's the first pillar, you see. They made mm-hmm. that the first pillar. And so you look at this and you say, well, that's the healing aspect of Tarot, if you understand how it works. And that way they said, okay, in doing certain magical things, you begin here, you go here, you go here, you go here for meditations. And so that's a good thing, because that's a very healing part of it. Regulus is this beautiful, beautiful star. I don't know if you've seen it in Leo. It really is very beautiful. Leo is a scythe in the sky. I don't know. Have you seen it, Leo?
Well, you know what? I have, but I mean, I'm not a stargazer like you are, in that I look at the stars, but without trying, you know, I just look at them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
yes,
Oh,
I've seen it,
yeah.
but yes.
Oh, it's breathtaking. I mean, constellations are breathtaking. You look at them and you're saying, oh my God. Or you look at Cepheus, for example, in the sky, or Cassiopeia, and you look up and you say, these constellations are virtually the same constellations that my
the ancestors.
Great, 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 yeah. great, 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 you know.
Yes. They were looking upon those, yes.
Yeah, that people so far back, I can't even begin to conceive of them, that they conceived me, but tens of thousands of years ago, they saw them, and they were virtually unchanged, you know. Or that you look at it's just unbelievable. Or you look at Cepheus, who is actually... supposed to be Khufu, the builder of the Great Pyramid, that constellation in the sky, that the tip of his hat was once the pole star, you know, and you think, wow, that's how old this constellation, well, they're all very old, you know, they're billions of years old. And you look at that and you say, that was once the pole star. Or you look at Cygnus and you see this gigantic, and it is, it looks like a swan flying in the sky. And the mind boggles at these constellations that are massive and they dwarf us. And you look at, and then you look at the way the Chinese looked at them, because they're vastly different. And of course, with the lights in the sky today, you know, the lighting we have, it's hard to see them. It's kind of depressing, really. I used to be able to see constellations much better when I moved into my house almost 30 years ago. Now I can barely see anything. It's hard to see. But the key is that these constellations are, and when Ptolemy wrote his treatise on the constellations back in Alexandria, he could see 48 constellations, and now we have new ones, and there's like 88 now. But the thing is, looking at the constellations, they divided the sky up into these pieces, and of course he had just the northern constellations, and they had meaning, and they were the myths, you know. And this was what the world meant. And this divided up the world and people, and it meant everything. And it was how we were. It defined us. I love that. You know? So the mythologies were very important to us. And Aquarius was about deliverance, because in that part of the sky was Cetus, the whale. Yeah. And the whale was, kind of the Kraken. It was the story of Andromeda.
I love the Kraken.
Yeah, release it. You got to release the Kraken.
Release
Otherwise,
the Kraken,
there's no
yes.
drama, you know? But, pardon me. But the whole point is, there are times when we need, there are times of trouble. There are times when we are desperate. There are times when things are just lousy. And Aquarius delivers the rains. Aquarius delivers the water. And none of that's important unless we have our time of trouble. And I think that you said healing. And I think that that's what we're headed for, is some times of healing. I believe that. I think we can all agree that we're about to head into some very interesting times.
Yes. We
you know?
Are. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a couple of comments about the things that you were saying that I just want to throw out. And you and I have had this conversation before, you know, that whole dilemma of, do I write a book? Do I share my secrets? Do I share my insights, et cetera, et cetera? And of course, that's a personal decision. But the one thing that you said, which I want to emphasize, is that, you know, learning about these concepts, whether it's astrology or tarot or any other kind of, in a sense, esoteric study, or just coming to your own personal philosophy, in many ways, you have to learn those for yourself. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't write books. I mean, I depend on them. I love, in fact, right now I'm reading a book on tarot that, you know, it's the first one in years that I felt like, okay, I can really identify with this woman's insights. And so I appreciate when somebody says, when I look at this card, when I look at this concept, this is what I feel, or this is what I think it means. But I also feel if you're really going to work with one of these tools, you have to figure it out for yourself. You have to know, when does that card come up for you? What does that symbol mean? You've got to, you know, and here again, it almost goes back to what I was talking about, using our skills collaboratively, you know, sharing our skills, but you've got to contribute, you know, and if you only memorize the cards and say, okay, this card means blah, 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 you know, I've had a lot of people when I'll read, they'll say, hey, where did you get that interpretation for that card? You know, that's not in any book. And right. Of course it's not, but that card always comes up in a certain situation for me. So whether you want to consider that's how my guides, you know, talk to me or whatever, that's my individual contribution. You came to me. There was a reason you came to me. And this is the card you chose, or this is the card that came up, or this is the pattern. So once again, you have shared your knowledge in many ways. You've taught classes. You have written things. Oh, yeah. But, and there again, that's up to you. But I always was impressed by that idea, you know, and you're one of the first people that really impressed that upon me. If you don't work with the cards and come up with your interpretations, you've got, it's almost like the tarot has all these little secret messages. They're embedded in the cards, no matter what deck you use. Now, some decks I do think are better than others, but you know, you look at them and they speak to your unconscious, or they speak to something within you. And if you don't get excited about that, or if you're not that treasure hunter, so to speak, then I'm not sure the cards are ever going to speak to you. You know, so I think
I agree 100%.
Yeah, that's just such an important concept. And so what I'm trying to say, it's a long way of saying it, I really appreciate everything that you have ever shared, but we still all have to do our own homework. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
And do our own learning.
I came to that realization after, like I said, 45 years of studying Crowley, you know, and at the end of it, I realized that I had completely cracked his code, and I thought, so what? So what? It didn't mean anything to me anymore. It was rubbish. He was brilliant, but what he had done so brilliantly was forced me to completely understand my understanding of tarot.
Mm-hmm.
He had forced me to understand tarot through my self, so mm-hmm. that I understood tarot well enough to create my own deck. And that was the whole reason for the Golden Dawn. In the Golden Dawn, the magical order in England, and which now exists, the whole purpose of that order, to graduate that order, so to speak, you had to create your own deck.
Uh-huh.
You would usually, because not everyone was an artist, you would hire someone to create your deck for you, but you had to tell them everything, what color, what this, what that. And then you had to defend your deck in front of a panel, like a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that. And then you would use that deck for the rest of your life. Well, after this work I did for this amount of time, I created my own deck. And I realized that I had, in fact, graduated. I'm holding it in my hand right now and looking at it. And it was, at that point, I realized that I had graduated, that I no longer, I have his deck. I have a deck right here, right next to me, that is his deck. But I don't use it because I graduated. It's the thing that we strive for, I think, is a full understanding of the process, and you become so invested in it, and it becomes vested within you, that you understand everything about the process. I don't know how else to put it.
Mm-hmm.
He succeeded. He taught me everything I needed to know about the process and everything I needed to know about that form of divination, to the point where I was the deck. And I don't know, I'm so grateful to him. I can't even express it. He was a brilliant, brilliant teacher. And he tore me into shreds in the process, because that was his goal, I'm convinced. That's the book he wrote, the Book of Thoth, that was so enigmatic and so tortuous. I don't know. You end up loving and hating him at the same time, but he did it on purpose. And he really, genius, and really hardcore.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I sound crazy. I don't mean to.
No, you don't. But you know, I'm very eclectic. So in fact, I have three of those decks in different sizes. That's why.
Oh, me too. I've got three. Probably 20.
But you know, I have any number of other decks, and I continue to buy decks from time to time, because each of the people that have created those, like you said, that's theirs. And so it's interesting to see what they might contribute. And I always get something new. In fact, I recently did give away a deck because I thought there's just nothing here I want. Now, maybe, I'm not going to say that was a mistake, but I'm just saying I think it just wasn't going to speak to me. And I didn't find the pictures evocative. They were all very dull, and the colors were very dull. Many of the cards looked identical, even though they weren't. And I thought, this feels like a struggle, you know? So I just gave it away. But I also got another deck recently, because I hadn't bought a deck in maybe 3 or 4 years. And so all of a sudden I just said, I need some new decks. So I got a deck in which the pictures are very pretty. I really appreciate them. I love them. But it's interesting, in the little book, for the swords, the author literally says, the swords are traditionally very negative, so we're just not going to go there. We're going to give them all bright and wonderful meanings. Now, I believe all the cards, in a sense, are neutral, and they each have a good a good side, or an enlightening, kind of good and bad. Let's just go there. So no card is ever going to be like horrible, and no card is ever going to be just nothing could go wrong. But to say, to just take the whole suit of swords and go, you know what, they're really negative, we're not going to go there.
Right.
I thought, boy, I think they missed the boat. Totally missed the boat. And maybe partially because of like what you were saying. It's sad to think that we need trouble in order to understand something else. But on the other hand, if you think about the birth process itself, that's a pretty, troublesome or painful and or scary probably process for both the mother and the baby, right? The baby probably isn't going, woohoo, this feels great. The baby's like, what the hell is happening here, right? So we do evolve through those. Or whether, I always like to go back to the caterpillar and the chrysalis. You know, these processes are not necessarily just totally joyful, but they're often necessary. And we don't have to not enjoy them. That's a choice to say, this is painful, this isn't worth it. You know, those are all choices. Those are all impressions and interpretations that we put on them. But, it's like, no, I'm not going to throw out the negative side of the swords. That's where I've learned some of my best lessons.
Of course.
You know, and in fact, I tell this story, I continually, after getting an astrology reading with John Joseph, I did that for years on my birthday. And then he'd always have me pull a card. And it was always the Nine of Swords, every single year for 3 years in a row.
Wow.
And yeah, right. Whoa. And guys, just, you can hear it in Bo's voice. That is not the card that you want to walk away with going, oh, that's my year, worry and, just anxiety, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, on the third year, I just said, I was being very Aquarian maybe, but I said, I'm not going to take this. I'm not going to leave this with this card. I'm not taking that anymore. And he said, CA, you will quit pulling that card when you don't need it. When you are willing to really look at that energy and do something about it, you won't be pulling that card. And interestingly enough, I still pull that card pretty often. But at least now when I pull that card, I go, yeah, there's my card. You know, come on. Did you fall asleep again? Did you forget? Where do you need to go with this? But that was really striking to me when he said that. When you don't need it anymore, you'll quit pulling that energy or that card. But you know what? You don't just get rid of the Nine of Swords and go, nope, we're not going there anymore.
But the Nine of Swords is a reality of life.
I mean, I know.
That is the culmination of the suit, you know?
Yes.
The nines are the culmination of their suit. And the truth of life is that life is at times quite cruel.
Yes.
That's just the way it is. I mean, and it's about mental processes. It really is. Let's face it. We aren't easy as human beings.
life can be tough.
Yeah. And especially when it comes to the way we think, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there can be some harsh times. Let's look at ourselves as human beings. Is there war in the world? How many? You know,
mm-hmm.
Has it ever been? They say the only time there has not been war on this planet has been during the reign of King Solomon, and that's been a while ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, and look at our. I mean, it's ridiculous. And do we ever stop thinking? Do we ever stop worrying?
Apparently not.
No. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, that Nine of Swords is a constant in most people's lives, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about plumbing the other day, and I thought, oh my God, there's water everywhere in this house, and it's behind the pipes, and it's, you know, behind the walls, and it's here, and it's there, and it's just a matter of time before, you know, and that's Nine of Swords, and electricity. Mm-hmm. And there's electricity just inches away from these pipes, you know? Also in the walls. That's Nine of Swords. You know, that's how it is. Bank accounts.
Yeah.
Hackers.
Yeah.
Presidential.
Well, elections, yes. That's right. Nine of Swords.
Did you know that it's possible that Kamala Harris actually won the popular vote and we're going to find that out any day?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Because I will admit, I broke up.
They're still
up,
counting.
I broke up with all my friends on the news channels.
Yeah.
We're not seeing each other right now.
Well, I'm watching them.
It may be temporary, but I needed to take a break, which brings me to another point I wanted to make, which you brought up, which was looking at the stars and whether or not you can see them. I live in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I can tell you the sky is so bright at night. You don't have to live near the strip for this to be true.
Yeah.
The sky is so bright at night, there's no stars. And in fact, my mother said that. She goes, why can't we ever see the stars anymore? Oh, yeah. And I said, because, Mom, there's so much ambient light in the sky. And it is true. You know, I see planets. I see some of the planets from time to time, you know, Mars and Jupiter and Venus specifically. And, of course, the moon is gorgeous. But, you know, those constellations are just kind of like blocked out. There's just so much ambient light. But I bring it up because it goes back to also what I said in the beginning. Sometimes we just have to pull ourselves away from something in order to see what we need to see.
Right.
And we can sit here and curse the darkness, so to speak, or to curse, oh yeah, I'll never see this. Or I could drive outside the city. You know, I could do something. And so that's it too. When you think about healing or you think about restoring something in your life, partially that's accepting what is, but then take yourself out of that situation, even if it's temporary.
My wife wants to do that, but she is strangely glued to the TV right now, even though she is in pain and agony. Well, you know, I predicted the wrong thing. And I went back and looked at charts, and it's creepy.
Yeah.
I know what I saw.
Yeah.
I know what I saw. Have you looked at charts?
I have.
It's creepy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And so many astrologers were willing to go out on a limb and predict, and were wrong.
Well,
or at least, so far they're wrong. Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm just saying, and now here's the thing I heard last night, that there is a very strong chance that with the popular vote, Harris is going to win. But that's not how this country is run.
No, it is not.
So I'm just saying, it was a fair election. And Aquarius, we're going to have Pluto in Aquarius. We need the healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, I've been saying in my power peak, I'm saying it to myself, I'm saying it to everyone, let it go.
Yeah.
And relax. And yeah. Just meditate. I'm playing my Anasazi flute, you know?
Oh, nice.
Oh, it is. It's haunting is what it is. My wife calls it something completely different. But there's something about it that is meditative, and I'm hitting high octaves, which is really probably horrible to most, but there's something very soothing about it. I'm about to start whittling again. We have to find our peace.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
if you can't find it within yourself, you're never going to find it in the world.
That's right. And Pluto is the edge of the solar system, the edge. So we got to find some new beginnings. And Aquarius is Saturn's, you know, and Saturn was the edge of our solar system mm-hmm. at one time.
That's right.
It was the last sphere. And so we're talking about new beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this is all about. Just relax.
It absolutely is new beginnings, even if those new beginnings are kind of like the birth process.
Well, that's what
they're
I'm saying.
They're a little traumatic that, you know, we're not quite sure how this works out. There might be some screaming, but it's a new beginning.
And here's what I'm saying. It hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing has happened yet. Take a deep breath, let it out, and relax. It's only November.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, well, we have to end this show. And so I want to thank you so much, Mo, for being on today. Thank you very much for your contribution. I always look forward to, I always say just being provoked. You make me think about things in a new way. And there's almost nothing I like better than thinking in a new way. So thank you very much for that. And to all the listeners and everybody in the chat room, I'm sorry I didn't, you know, holler out to you, but I do see your names. And thank you so much for being there. In our chat room today, and I have read all your comments, and we'll make sure I take a look at that after the show too, just in case I miss something. Thanks to our producer Jay Barbell. I want to encourage you to stay tuned for Empowerment with Kelly Whetstone, because coming up next, I am going to join Kelly for our monthly meeting of the minds. A reminder that Mercury will be moving retrograde next Monday. That's November 25th. We may dip into that a little bit on the show next week too, but just know that that's going to happen before we come back together. And please read the Power Peak, Mark's Power Peak. But I also want to end today with a quote that I did have in the Power Peak this week, but I love it and I think it's pertinent to this conversation as well. This is by Winston Churchill, who, as we know, went through a lot of trials and tribulations during his lifetime. He was born with Sun and Venus in Sagittarius, and his Sun was in connection to Uranus, that planet of revolution that rules Aquarius. And his quote is, "For myself, I'm an optimist. It does not seem to be much use to be anything else." That kind of sounds like you, Mo. So I love that. And if Winston Churchill could say that after everything that he went through, I think we all can do that. So this is CA
signing.
Yes, me too. So this is CA signing out. You have been listening to Everyday Astrology with my guest Mo Abdelbaki on 1-2 Radio, where we are transforming the way we listen to the world.